to the Blessed One, one who is far from the defilements and who has awakened by himself. So the perfectly self-awakened Buddha, he is far away from the defilements. He gained that awakening by himself. And so those who are able to have the wisdom to defeat the defilements by themselves, it's only the perfectly self-awakened Buddhas who can do that. So it's they need bhairami, these spiritual qualities, to a degree that's even more higher and more significant than all of their disciples. In order to have the wisdom to contemplate into paticca samuppada, a cycle of dependent origination. And so there are these 12 steps in that cycle, in that process of dependent origination, which means that when there is this arising, then this will come up. So with this as a cause, then something will arise. And so when there is ignorance as the cause, sankharas arise, formations, with sankharas as the cause, then there is vijnana, and there's nama rupa. And this carries on until we get to the feeling being as the cause, then there's craving. And with craving, then there's clinging, and there's becoming and birth. So the Buddha could contemplate into this very subtle and refined Dhamma, that his disciples, they weren't able to understand that by themselves, that they needed to listen to the Dhamma from the Buddha himself or through some of his disciples in order to be able to understand. They needed to hear about this path of practice first. And because for the Buddha to be able to awaken by himself, that he needed to create great bhairami first that no other could equal. And then he taught the Dhamma to the five ascetics. He taught about arising and then persisting for a short while and ceasing, with whatever is of the nature to arise is of the nature to cease. So he taught about this arising and ceasing. And this is something that needs to have wisdom to be able to contemplate. If we're going to talk about causes and conditions, dependent origination, then this requires greater wisdom. And one of my students had asked me, why is it that when the Buddha gave the first teaching, he didn't teach about dependent origination because it was that through which he awakened, looking into dependent origination. But contained within dependent origination are the Four Noble Truths. Suffering arises due to what? Due to ignorance, due to craving, due to clinging. With this as the cause, then suffering comes up. That we, when we have that, those things, then we will suffer. In order to abandon that suffering, to not suffer, we need to put down our clinging and our craving. That these are obstacles for us, that we need to pass through those obstacles. We need to put down craving, put down clinging. And we do that through sila, samadhi, and panya, as virtue, the mind which is stable and firm, and wisdom. But if we're going to explain that in a very refined and detailed way, then it's explained as dependent origination. But really, contained within all of that, or if we're going to summarize that, then it's the Four Noble Truths. So the Buddha initially taught in an easy way, said the what is of the nature to arise is of the nature to cease. And he taught in a way that was appropriate to the people who were listening at that time. So for the five ascetics, he taught them this. And then after that, he taught them about anatta, not self, and they were able to reach arahantship, this full awakening. So the Buddha was the Satta Deva Manusanang, and so the teacher of humans and devas. And one needs great barami to be able to do that, needs to have the highest level of mindfulness and wisdom. So we're all extremely fortunate, the most fortunate people there are, because we've met with the teachings of the Buddha, which gives us a path to bring our hearts to freedom from all suffering. And so we have a knowledge of this already. We have faith already. So we have knowledge about the training of the mind and growing in wisdom. We know that when we let go, then the mind doesn't suffer anymore. And this here is the very heart of the teachings of the Buddha, and the very core of Buddhism. And so then we don't wish for the heart to have any defilements. But when we have that desire, then there's this great struggle within the mind. And that's not correct, because that just gives us even more suffering. So all that we do is when we practice, we let go as we practice. And we study whatever feelings it is that comes into our minds. And we just put them down, we let them go. We know them, and we know that there's really nothing to them. That there's not a me, not a mine. That there isn't a sight, and there's no one who receives that sight. That it's all empty. And we let go. That there's no one to be angry at, and there's no one who is angry. It's just four elements, five khandhas. And so if we have the cause of delusion within the heart, then that will bring us to cling and to suffer. So we need to study these well, and to know what's happening. If greed, hatred, and delusion arise, and then we see them. You see they're in the mind in the present moment. And then we establish ourselves firmly in this training of mindfulness in the present moment. The things that have passed already, there is still the sanya, the memory of them within the mind. And then when that memory comes up, then there's a self that comes up with that memory. So we have a self in the past, a self in the present, a self in the future. And there's all these concoctions and proliferations upon that. But we try to establish our mindfulness. And even though we do that, perhaps we're not able to put that down, that our wisdom hasn't reached that point yet. And why? Because our samadhi is not stable yet. And so the way that we view things is not yet clear. But don't worry about that. Just maintain your sila, your virtue, and carry on forbearing. Because sometimes in our practice, it can be, can feel really heavy. There can be all these moods coming up in the mind. And so perhaps anger arises, and then we keep thinking about that over and over again. And then that goes then into ill will and wanting to harm. And this can happen throughout the day, throughout the night. And it can be really a struggle. It can be very difficult at this point. The mind is deluded already and it just keeps thinking here and there. But we can establish our mindfulness and contemplate, well, who is it that's thinking? Who's creating these stories? And who is it that knows this thinking? So whenever these feelings come up, whenever there's a sense of self, then we try to establish and care for our mindfulness. Even though there may be greed, hatred, or delusion, we still have mindfulness. Even though there may be anger in the mind, we maintain our virtue, and we're not careless around that. So we're still generous in a consistent way. We have this external generosity, internal generosity, which is the generosity of our forgiveness. So it's almost the end of the annual monastic rains retreat now. And on the last day of that retreat, which is in about 3 days' time, there will be the Mahapavarana day, which is the day of invitation, where the monks invite each other to tell them about any misdeeds that they may have done. So we've lived together for 3 months, and if there's anything someone's done that's still troubling the mind, it's important to forgive one another. Or maybe for the lay people, you've come to stay in the monastery for a period, you've come to offer food to the monks on alms round, come to study the Dhamma online. And so if there's anything in the heart which is still troubling you, then you just try to forgive. Because it's normal that we have those things, that our minds are still deluded, they still cling. So we need to also forgive one another. And to do that in our workplaces as well, with our colleagues, and home with our families, and whatever people it is that we meet with in our society, it's just normal that there'll still be some feeling left over, some trouble within the heart. And that's just natural for beings that still have defilements in their minds, who still give rise to a sense of self, to me and mine. And so sometimes we don't like what the things that other people have done. And Venerable Ajahn Chah, he taught that, well, if you yourself are carrying something heavy, then that's one thing. But if someone else is carrying something heavy, and then you go and pick up the heavy thing as well, then that's something else. And so if people have done things that we don't like, and they're suffering, sorry, people are acting through greed, hatred, and delusion, and that's causing suffering, so they're feeling heavy. But then if we go and dislike that, we go and criticize that, then we too are picking up a very heavy weight. So we need to try to just not pick that up. And so we may be holding on to our views and looking down on others, criticizing others. You have a view that I am correct, that I am good. I'm good and they're not good. I'm strict in my practice and they're not strict in their practice. And this is delusion. This is conceit. It arises from the sense of self and giving rise to a me and a you, and then clinging to that, and then this conceit coming up. But we need to understand the nature of that as well. Understand how when we begin to practice, we have a sense of love for ourselves. And there's still a clinging within our minds to all different kinds of things. And this is just how it is for everyone. So like some people, they are very interested in ceremonies, like Buddhist ceremonies, and they have a belief in that. So I believe that but this ceremony needs to be done at this particular time. This is an auspicious time to do it. These are auspicious objects to be using. This is an auspicious way to be conducting the ceremony. But when we really kind of understand what that's about, understand the principles, we see that it's really due to, or it's about our mindfulness and our wisdom. But we still shouldn't look down upon others and thinking that they're superstitious or they're gullible. And why? Because when they reach the point where they gain an understanding, then maybe then they'll be able to know the Dhamma, see the Dhamma. So it's like, we've probably heard before the story in the suttas of a child of a Brahmin. And this child, he praised the six directions every day. And so his father was a Sotapanna, but his son didn't want to go to the monastery. And the father had a lot of wisdom to be teaching his son. And so he taught him about this, about praising the six directions. And this is something that his son could believe in and could accept and would do every day. And so he would go and give homage to the six directions and following the Brahmin tradition. And he met with the Buddha, and the Buddha taught him the meaning of each direction, that the upwards direction is the direction of paying homage to ones that we respect. And each of the other directions had their own meaning. So one of the directions are friends. Another direction are those who have given us mindfulness and wisdom. Another direction are laborers or employees. So there were these six directions. And the Buddha taught him until he understood the meaning of it. So do we see that? That initially he was attaching to these actions, to these deeds. But next he gained wisdom from that. So therefore people who currently don't have an understanding, that one day this wisdom can arise. And maybe when that wisdom comes up, they'll be able to see the Dhamma. So we shouldn't criticize people who have little wisdom, but rather we, because that is conceited, but instead we try to give our forgiveness to one another. So the Buddha taught at the end of the rains retreat for the monks all over the world to have this Mahapavarana ceremony, which is that all people who have gathered together to practice with one another, that if we are keeping anger, inner will, and thoughts of cruelty in our mind, that that's going to stop us from developing in our practice. So there was a time where Venerable Ajahn Mun, the founding father of this tradition, he was going on alms round with his monks and novices. And he turned to them and said, well, if your views and understanding ways of practice aren't in line with one another, you still need to forgive each other, and to not find fault and to look at the other people's downsides. Because if you do that, then that's going to become an obstruction to your practice of the Dhamma. It's going to be a barrier to your samadhi and margapala nibbana, the path, the fruitions and nibbana. And so, therefore, if we can forgive one another, that will allow us to develop and grow in our practice. And so, like, when we go to work, and it's possible that you may have difficulties with one another, or in our communities, there may be some difficulties, and that's just normal. But we need to try to not hold on to that. We need to try to forgive. We need to try to let go. So this is something which is important in our practice. We should be contemplating like this and doing this a lot, developing it a lot. But when we try to do this, it can be really hard as well. It can really go against the grain, grate against our hearts. Because our defilements, they just don't want to give in. Our teacher tells us to be respectful, to be humble, and we know that that's correct, but our minds just don't want to give in to that. And so that can be the case for the elders in the community and for the younger members of the community who just don't want to give in to one another. And so when that's the case, then there's the self coming up and there's anger arising. And this anger can really hold a firm grip on our hearts. And that too is something that is normal. So we need to really try to contemplate that. But it can be really hard for someone who's a good person, and then someone else comes and they do something which isn't good. But we need to accept that that's just how it is, that people are different like this. And if we can accept that, then there can be an ease and coolness to our hearts. So we do that for the purpose of reaching the end of the path, which is Nibbana, which is letting go. When our hearts are able to do that, then they'll feel light and joyful. But the defilements, they really don't want to accept that. It can be really hard for them to give in. But we try to do it for the sake of freedom from suffering. And if we're not able to accept, then we have to forbear for now. So whatever it is that comes up in the heart, we just forbear with that. So anger comes up and we endure with that. Greed comes up, we endure. Delusion comes up, we endure. And we carry on doing that until we're able to overcome it. And the great masters have given the comparison of it being like a tiger in a cage. And if we don't feed it, you know, give it any water, then it's going to run out of energy. And so our minds are like this. That if we don't follow the unwholesome states within them, anger comes up, but we just don't follow it. We have the mindfulness there to do that. Greed comes up, delusion comes up, and we don't follow that. Then that can feel really agitated, that our hearts can feel very hot, that it really grates against the heart. But as we carry on doing that, then it gets better and better until we're able to succeed. And so right now, we're really good in our practice. You know, if we're able to do that, then we see that that's really already very skilled. And we should be praising our hearts, at least some, and that we're able to reach that point. Even though perhaps when we meditate sometimes we're able to reach samadhi and sometimes we're not, that wisdom, we don't even need to talk about that because it's not much at the moment. But we're still able to practice in this way. We're still able to go against the desires of the heart. And what happens when we do that? Well, the heart becomes beautiful. We turn into a Kalyanachana, so a being with a beautiful heart. So I have confidence that all of you listening have reached this point in your practice already, that you're at the point of a Kalyanachana, of someone with a beautiful heart, that you're generous, you're selfless in your giving, and that's just something that's normal for you. This is something that's really worthy of praising and of finding joy in, that you give to help support the growth of the Buddhasasana. And you give following the means and the energy that you have. And not only that, but you also practice as well. And so some of you are living far away, and some of you are close by, some of you are overseas, some in Thailand, but you still find these opportunities to create goodness and to be practicing too. You sometimes go to a monastery and help out at the monastery, and also be meditating at the same time, you know, maintaining your mindfulness. And that's something really worthy of finding joy in. Being intent on seeking out this path which leads to the end of suffering. And as we progress along that path, then our peace grows and our doubts diminish. And when doubts are present in the mind, there can be a struggle going on. Do we want to get results very quickly? Ajahn Chah said, well, if you want quick results, then don't do anything. When I heard that, I thought, well, if you don't do anything, that may be fast, but right now, if I don't do anything, then how am I going to get there? How am I going to reach? You know, it's like, if we don't have any food to eat right now, well, then what are we going to eat? Well, like a farmer, that in order for them to get food, they need to go out, and they need to clear the field first. They need to plow it first. They need to plant the crops. And only then, when they harvest, are they able to get food. But right now, we don't have anything, but we still want quick results. You want quick results, and Ajahn Chah said to not do anything, which means to let go. But are we able to do that right now? And if we're not able to do that, then we need to put in the work first. So our goal is Nibbana, which is developing the mind to the highest level, to the point where we don't need to be born again, need to die again, need to be spinning around in the cycle of samsara. Because each life that we get born into the human world, we have to get old, we have to get sick, and then we have to die, and there's this attachment to me and mine. And all the things that we are, the things that we gain within this world, we have to be separated from all of that. This is something that we really should be thinking about. So right now, there's many billions of people in this world. And if we don't count the new births, then in a bit over 100 years, then everyone will have gone, vanished from this world. And they all will have died. Everyone who is born here, who has the sense of self and things that belong to them, that just won't be here anymore. And then their children get born, and they too have a me, then things that belong to me. But then 100 years from then all of them will have died too. And so there's this birth and death, birth and death. And within each life, each realm of existence that we are born into, that we suffer in that state. But we want to experience a happiness which is a sure thing, which is a permanent thing. It's like we're building a house, and we want that house to be firm and stable and to last all the time, but that's impossible. But still we do the best that we can, and we look after that house as best we can. And so, with our minds being in this world, and born into this world, when we know that they're going to attach to something, we should be very careful around that, because that's a danger for us. The things that we like, we feel fond of, that we're about to attach to, then that we can contemplate how that will become a cause for suffering to arise. But we're still living in this world. If we're a child, we still need to study. If we're an adult, we still need to work with our mindfulness and also with sila dhamma, with virtue. So our external work, we need to fulfill that and also fulfill our internal work as well, which is the training of this mind, and to do both of them, and to have mindfulness, to abandon all unskillful states, be giving rise to the skillful and making the mind pure. And this is the heart of the Buddha's dispensation. So whatever it is that is harmful, that is unskillful, we try to put that down. And the things that are wholesome, we try to raise those up and build them first. Because right now we still have a me. And we still have my possessions. So we need to bring that me to be a good me, a good self, a meritorious, a skillful self, to be an individual who has intelligence. Because if that self that we have is a coarse sense of self, then that'll be the cause for a lot of suffering to arise. And so therefore, within this life and in future lives that we're born into, if there is still that sense of self, then we try to make that a virtuous, a skillful sense of self. And then we come to train the mind and be firm in that, like we are now. Come to chant, come to meditate, and do that every day. So we have the opportunity to be doing that, to be growing our internal energy, to be developing our samadhi so that it becomes better. If we keep the 5 precepts, we can start keeping the 8 precepts on some days. And so our mindfulness, our wisdom steadily grows and grows. We see the drawbacks in going between birth and death in the cycle of samsara. See the drawbacks in the heart that attaches to things. And then we firmly set ourselves on this path of practice until we're able to meet with peace. We're able to see the truth appear within our hearts. And if we can see this, it's really incredible right there at that point. And we never would have imagined that it's this much happiness, that it's really to this degree. And it's even more so when we clearly understand the Dhamma of the perfectly self-awakened Buddha. And the faith that we have becomes full at that point. Initially, what's important is for us to practice along this path that the great teachers have taught, that Ajahn Mun and Ajahn Chah, that they've practiced themselves already and have sat down. And their disciples, over 100 of them, many hundreds, they became arahants. So this is the path that leads to the end of suffering, this way of generosity, of virtue, of meditation, or you could phrase it as virtue and a firm, stable mind and wisdom. So this is something that we should practice in, not just during the 3-month rains retreat, but outside of that as well, to be doing it each and every day. That we don't just practice sincerely during the rains and then just let it all go outside of the rains. And that's because suffering and clinging, that they arise both inside the rains retreat and outside the rains retreat. They arise in the monastery, they arise at home, they arise all the time. So we need to always be practicing, to always be having mindfulness. Being mindful, knowing whatever objects it is that enters into our hearts. It's like if sights come in, if sounds come in, being able to let go of those. Looking after the mind, knowing right now, for instance, that doubt has arisen. And that doubt is going to start conditioning the mind, start giving rise to concoctions and thoughts. And if that happens, then that's going to create endless difficulty for us. So we teach our minds then first, who is it that is doubting? Is it really me? And who is the one who knows those doubts? Is that me? Don't allow me to start proliferating upon you, that you, these doubts, you're trying to trick me. We teach our minds like this. We teach them and try to change that mood, try to change that mental state. But our mindfulness needs to be very quick, to be up to speed with this, to let go of those doubts. And so this is the same no matter what comes up, that it's normal, greed, hatred, and delusion arise. But don't worry about that. But when they happen, that we teach our minds, we train our minds first. And as we do this, then eventually we'll gain wisdom, the wisdom that helps us to cultivate greater samadhi. And when samadhi has arisen already, then an even greater form of wisdom arises, that which allows us to know all of the objects within the mind for what they are as they're happening. And we can let go of them. Because whatever it is that we attach to, that we will suffer due to that. Sometimes there are things that we don't like, and we can try to just run away from that. There are people like this as well. There are some practitioners who they can gain samadhi already, and so they don't want to do any chanting. They think, well, if I chant, then my mind's going to start concocting, start proliferating. And they see that it's easier to just sit and meditate and allow the mind to be in peace. But that also is not correct. That's a view which isn't correct. When they are able to know and to understand in time, then they'll realize that I need to let go. That when it's time to chant, then I'll just chant with mindfulness. And we don't just try to run away from anything that we don't like, anything which may disturb our peace. So therefore, whatever it is that we attach to, that will bring up suffering. So we need to try to put down this craving, clinging, through our wisdom. As we do that, then our samadhi will grow. This vitaka, vichara, piti, sukha, ekagata. So the initial application of mind, sustained application of mind, rapture, happiness, and the unification of mind. That this will grow, our wisdom will grow. And then we're able to gain this rapture within our samadhi practice. And piti is rapture, it holds back ill will. And when we come out of that state of samadhi, we're able to use that energy to destroy the defilements in the heart. And then we get to the level of the subtle ones, we're able to destroy those as well. So we contemplate into this body, and then as our wisdom grows, we're able to contemplate on more and more refined levels. Then samadhi too grows and grows, and the mind's able to reach a state of happiness and unification. And we have this energy to be able to look into the nature and see the reality of physicality and mentality. And so we need to practice in this way, in stages. We need to be contemplating the body first, because our wisdom right now, it's not much. So we take the practice step by step. And as we do that, then the rapture that we feel grows, our samadhi grows. And we're able to more clearly understand these teachings. And so the five ascetics, the Buddha taught them about arising and ceasing, and they reached Sotapanna. And then when he taught them about anatta, not self, they could reach arahantship. But they could reach that point because they had already practiced to that point. So therefore, today we're doing our Dhamma practice. This is something that we should carry on doing, to be doing this throughout the year, in many years in the future. And this is a great form of merit that we are producing. And as we just carry on practicing, and then we'll gain an understanding, able to understand the Dhamma or even attain to the Dhamma. And so for all of you here, that you have a lot of spiritual virtues, have a lot of merit, that you could come and be listening like this, that you have this respect within the Buddha's teachings. But if we're going to talk about that in a more profound way, we say that the Buddha is in the Dhamma, that it's pure emptiness. That when one sees the Dhamma, they see as the nature of the Dhamma, this nature of arising, lasting, and ceasing, nature of all physicality and mentality to be this way. And they see that with clarity. And it's just like how the Buddha taught. And so therefore the Buddha is in the Dhamma. And therefore all things are anatta, not self. They're empty. And so this not-self, also this emptiness, is Buddha. And Buddha is in all things. And when we're able to let go, we're able to see the reality like this, we see that this world, it's just composed of different elements. There isn't really anything to it. We can contemplate into all physical and mental things. So may all of you set your hearts on practicing the Dhamma. And may you carry on persisting with this practice. Do this today and then tomorrow as well during this retreat. Giving rise to mindfulness, wisdom, a clear understanding in this path of practice, and really try to put that path into practice. Because if you just practice during these 9 days, and then when you leave this retreat, you let that go, you will get results from that, but those results will be little. So you need to be consistent, be even in your practice. Because if we don't practice, then the defilements will always be working away. Whenever there's sense contact, whenever the eye meets with the form, the ears meet with sounds, the tongue meets with taste, the nose with odors, the body with tactile sensations, the mind with Dhamma aramanas. Whenever there's that contact there, then the defilements are always working away. And so therefore we also need to be constantly working, to be doing this practice a lot, developing it a lot, to be contemplating very frequently. And so it's like a farmer who needs to just grow their crops. But when they do that, then they'll be able to harvest the fruits of that. They'll be able to get the fruit, they'll be able to get the grains or the flowers. And so when we have mindfulness and wisdom, then we're able to contemplate into the body, to see the truth of all physical and mental things. And then through that, we'll be able to understand and know the Dhamma. So you should be confident that this path that you're on is the correct path, and put down any doubts that you may have. Because when doubts come up, they just stay for a bit and then they go. There isn't anything to them. And so it's normal in our practice that they come up. When we see them come up, they just come up. When they go, they just go. And when we're able to contemplate them like that, then the heart feels at ease. But when the defilements are there, then we can start worrying, well, if I don't doubt, then how am I going to know whether I'm on the right path or not? That this is the defilements tricking us. So therefore we should establish our mindfulness well, to be able to endure, and then we'll be able to pass beyond all of those things. We put in our endurance, we put in our effort, and in the end mindfulness will arise, wisdom will arise, and eventually we'll be able to succeed in our practice. So may you grow in blessings. Mm-hmm.